The following is a seminar entitled Loving Relationships, Session 4, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasavhikari, recorded on June 26, 2011, in Sydney, Australia.
So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 9, Text Number 7. And then we'll read some other verses as well. This is the beginning point. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Bhakti Yoga Bahu Vidho Margai Bhamani Bhavyate Svabhava Guna Margena Pumsam Bhava Vibhidyate. Translation into a word by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Kapila, the Personality of Godhead, replied, O noble lady, there are multifarious paths of devotional service in terms of the different qualities of the executor. Pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness is one, because in pure devotional service there is no demand from the devotee to be fulfilled by the Lord. But generally, people take the devotional service with a purpose, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. People who are not purified take the devotional service with four purposes. A person who is distressed because of material conditions becomes a devotee of the Lord and approaches the Lord for mitigation of his distress. A person in need of money approaches the Lord to ask for some improvement in his monetary condition. Others who are not in distress or in need of monetary assistance, but are seeking knowledge in order to understand the absolute truth, also take the devotional service, and they inquire into the nature of the Lord. This is very nicely described in Bhagavad Gita 7.16. Actually, the path of devotional service is one without a second, but according to the devotee's condition, devotional service appears in multifarious varieties, as will be nicely explained in the following verses. The next verse will be discussing those devotees who are in the mode of ignorance, tamaguni Vaishnavas. Avisandhayo yo himsam tamban matsuram evava samrambi binadrig bhavam mai kuryat satamasah. Devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist, is considered to be in the mode of darkness. Purport, it has already been stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 2nd Chapter, that the highest, most glorious religion is the attainment of causeless, unmotivated devotional service. In pure devotional service, the only motive should be to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is not actually a motive. That is the pure condition of the living entity. In the conditioned stage, when one engages in devotional service, he should follow the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master in full surrender. The spiritual master is the manifested representation of the Supreme Lord, because he receives and presents the instructions of the Lord as they are by the civic succession. It is described in Bhagavad Gita that the teachings therein should be received by the civic succession, otherwise there is adulteration. To act under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master with a motive to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pure devotional service. But if one has a motive for personal sense gratification, his devotional service is manifested differently. Such a man may be violent, proud, envious, and angry, and his interests are separate from the Lord's. One who approaches the Supreme Lord to render devotional service, but who is proud of his personality, envious of others, or vengeful, is in the mode of anger. He thinks that he is the best devotee. Devotional service executed in this way is not pure, it is mixed and is of the lowest grade tamasaha. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura advises that a Vaishnava who is not of good character should be avoided. A Vaishnava is one who is taken to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life. But if one is not pure and still has motives, then he is not a Vaishnava of the first order of good character. One may offer his respects to such a Vaishnava because he accepted the Supreme Lord as the ultimate goal of life, but one should not keep company with a Vaishnava who is in the mode of ignorance. Now, this is a very interesting principle being introduced here, because we often say you should never find fault with a devotee. But if you don't have the discriminative vision to see which is devotee in the mode of ignorance and which is not devotee in the mode of ignorance, then how you can follow this instruction? So how do you not find fault at the same time distinguish here's a devotee in the mode of ignorance? It seems contradictory in one sense, doesn't it? You're not supposed to find any fault, but now you're supposed to see this devotee is in the mode of ignorance, so I better respect him from a distance. How do you balance those two principles? Sometimes we come across this in Prabhupada's teaching, you see. They seem contradictory. So is one wrong, the other is right? No, they're both right, but you have to understand how they act in harmony with each other. So what this really means, when we say don't find fault, it means you shouldn't be looking simply to find fault with devotees. But it doesn't mean you can't see the faults in the devotees. You have to, just like the spiritual master, it's his duty to find faults with the devotees. If he doesn't find faults with his disciples, what is he? He's the enemy of his disciples. Whatever you do is okay. Whatever you do is okay. Just keep the dakshina coming. That is a bogus guru. Bogus guru. Bona fide spiritual master has to see the fault in his disciples. And actually, every devotee has to learn to distinguish. Why? Because if you can't tell the difference between a devotee who is fixed up properly in Krishna consciousness and a devotee who is in the mode of ignorance, then you're not going to know who to associate with. We have to associate with advanced devotees. So we have to be able to distinguish between a tamasic devotee and an advanced devotee. We have to be able to distinguish. It's not a matter, not that we're looking down on them over being proud. If you get proud, then you're also in that category. So don't, you can't do it in a pride, proud way. But in a mood of, a devotee is in a mood of loving service. He wants to help everyone to become Krishna conscious. So if he sees that some devotees, you know, they're filling in the backbiting and fault finding, then you don't want to, you know, be a part of their group. That you sit around and backbite and fault find along with them. So this is an important principle. We need to associate with those devotees who are fixed up, who are very pure. You see, the better your association, the better your consciousness. Sangat sanjayate kama. You should find those devotees who are purely following the process of Krishna consciousness, who are totally absorbed in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. That's the kind of people, the transcendental devotee people, that you want to associate with as much as possible. Because those devotees are living in a very pure atmosphere. And if you associate with those kind of devotees, you're going to make a lot of advancement. But in these other type of devotees, we always try to reach out to them and help them. Not that we're cold to them. In other words, there's love in all the levels. Not that we're hateful towards such devotees. Again, if you're hateful, then you're in the same category. You're a tamasic devotee. You're hateful. But it's a matter of properly understanding how to love them. Just like the Vrithik example. Those devotees are very much, very tamasic. They're full of... Or just look at like the Muslim terrorists, for example. They're into violence, they're into killing non-Muslims. We don't say all Muslims like that. We have, there's some very nice Muslims who have joined our movement. We actually went, we had one of our leaders, one of our greatest acharyas, he's a Muslim, Haridas Thakur. We have nothing against someone coming from a Muslim background. We have many Muslim devotees in our movement. Seriously, dedicated their whole life to Prabhupada's mission, you see. So it's not that we don't discriminate against somebody because of their background, their body, their gender. There's no... Lord Chaitanya's movement means to cut through all this discrimination and to see everyone as the eternal servant of Krishna and try to bring them back to their original identity as Krishna's servants. So within this, we have to see how we can affect... First of all, we have to affect our own Krishna consciousness. That's the first principle. Prabhupada said the most important thing is you have to save the whole world, but even more important is to save yourself. So we have to, first of all, see that we are solidly situated ourselves in Krishna consciousness. And that's why we avoid, we don't intimately... We don't become, you know, those devotees who are very critical. It's like a born-again Christian would be in this category who says, you know, you're going to hell if you don't... if you follow Krishna, you're going to hell. That's, you know, that's an example. Somebody within our own Vaishnava tradition also, persons who were... too much critical, always finding fault, finding fault, finding fault. So we have to be discriminative who we associate with. We have to seek out and make loving relationships with people according to their position. Those who are more advanced, as we discussed yesterday, we ought to bow down at their feet. We offer them our service. We hear from them. We learn from them. We inquire from them. The more advanced devotees, you see. Those who are on an equal level with us, we make friendship with them. We share our realizations with them. Those who are less advanced, we try to help them as much as possible. But if they're too poisonous, we just have to avoid them. Or look for the time when we can reach through to them, when they come out of their, they become a little more elevated in their mood, and I'll look for that opportune moment. Well, we can reach through and give them some mercy that they will accept and elevate them. We have to have good intelligence, how to present Krishna consciousness, a very intelligent way, very attractive way, so that people who, they are persons who are caught up in a tamasic mode, just like the meat-eating Christians, it's tamasic mode. It's tamasic. You can't be sattvic and be a meat eater. But there are ways to reach out and help them. I was invited one time to speak at a Wednesday night study group at a Christian church in Austin, Texas. And being from a Christian background myself and having been inspired by Lord Jesus to join this movement, I had no problem, you know, glorifying Lord Jesus like anything. You know, and they loved it. They were just all smiling. And then, now, you must have this saying, I think in Australia also, but in America, a beef means also a complaint. I have a beef with you. So anyway, I use that word for an instructive purpose. After glorifying them, glorifying Lord Jesus, I mean to say, again and again, then I finally said, "But with you all, we have a beef, and that is the beef." And it was done so poetically. They were just like, you're laughing, they also were laughing. They thought, what a cool thing, you know, the way I did it, you know. They thought it was really cool the way I'd done it. And they were just all smiles hearing how beef eating was, you know, really the right thing to do. But if you present things intelligently. Prabhupada says in the best descriptive manner. When I wrote Prabhupada and asked him about book distribution, and Prabhupada is the supreme master of devotional service, so being engaged in book distribution, I asked Prabhupada about book distribution. He sent me one letter, and then he sent me a carbon copy of a letter that he had written to another devotee. And in the carbon copy letter that he sent me, Prabhupada said that, he said, if you will simply present these books in the best descriptive manner, then you can convince anyone, even an atheist, to purchase them. So, we're normally told not to, you know, avoid the atheist. Majjhima Nikaya is supposed to avoid the atheist. So Prabhupada is actually pushing us to come to Uttama platform. He said, well, we can preach to every, we can even make an atheist Krishna conscious. And what did he say? In the best descriptive manner. So that means we should really be always reading and discussing these books of Srila Prabhupada. Because that's how we can refine our ability to describe them nicely. Prabhupada explains that to be a poet is one of the qualities of the, one of the 26 qualities of being a devotee. And he pointed out, it's not that you become a poet, devotees, you're already a poet, but it becomes manifest. So actually, anyone who becomes Krishna conscious, they naturally come out with poetic qualities, be able to explain things in a very poetic way. Anyone becomes Krishna conscious. Just by becoming Krishna conscious, you automatically become poetic, to be able to say things in a very attractive way, you see. Very, you know, very nice choice words. Uttama shloka, Krishna, one who is described with choice words, you see. So that's a natural ability that comes out as you advance in Krishna consciousness. And even an atheistic person who's not even in this level, he's lower than the tamasic devotee, even such a person, you see. So it's not that we're writing off these persons as lost, but they're in a special category. We don't make our intimate friendship with persons who are always finding fault. But we preach to them whenever we have the opportunity, we engage them. You see, it's not, this was a fault of the Brahmins in India. They didn't want to reach out to the lower class members of the society. They just wanted to have a high class position for themselves. So don't take this in the wrong way. We're not supposed to reach out and be merciful and help these people. It means you don't intimately, you don't take their association as your inspiration. You see that they're not in a proper mood, and you see, take every opportunity to purify them and uplift them. Because the Brahmins neglected their duty to elevate everyone to the brahminical platform and wanted to keep everybody in a low position other than themselves and their descendants. They created the Hindu-Muslim problem in India, because if in the Hindu society I'm being told that you contaminated me with your shadow, you know, now you must be punished because you contaminated me with your shadow. You see? And who wants to be a part of such a society? They better become a Muslim. You see, such a criticized Hindu, better just become a Muslim. And so many people. You know, now the Muslims, they were not the native people. These were all foreigners who came in, but now just see. So this doesn't mean that you just shun people. You know, you're scum, you know, don't touch me, you don't get your shadow. It doesn't mean like that. It means you don't mix with them and go take association with them, take their association as your inspiration. Such persons should be preached to. They should be given kindness and elevated to a higher position. So, let's see. So now we can, is there any question? Good questions? We have a special program today. My wife, Vishnupriya Devi Dasi, will be answering the questions today. Or at least some of them. Rishis, can you come here? Anyway, those garlands can be presented. One here and one back there. You want me to start it off? Whenever you're inspired to speak, you want to go ahead and take the questions now? We can pass them to you. You can sit here. I can hear what you're saying now. Please sit here. Please come. Please come and sit here. No. Come on. No, I can't hear you well over there. I need to hear your answer. Huh? Want me to answer some? Anyway, the first one is, in one of your previous answers, you replied that addressing non-initiated devotees is bhakta. How to get back to this practice without affecting relationships without devotees? That's very... Oh, you mean if you call somebody bhakta who's been called Prabhu all this time, they may be offended? Well, I would... If you want to start calling non-initiates bhakta, like Prabhupada said we should, and how do you change it when it's already a Prabhu system? Well, I've seen how the big corporations do this. You do it gradually. You don't do it all of a sudden. Just like when I was a kid in Texas, there was one company called Humble Oil Company. It was headquartered in Humble, Texas. They pronounced it Humble, actually. But it was Humble Oil Company. And then they were bought out by, they became Exo or some other, they changed their name. So the way they did it was gradually. They still had Humble on the top, and then they had the new name was in small letters underneath it. And gradually they had the new name was in big letters, and the old name was in small letters, and gradually the old name completely disappeared. So this is how you, if you want to change a system, that's how you do it. You do it gradually. You don't do it abruptly.
Why not do something which is good right away? There is a saying in Ramayana that something is good, do it immediately. Not to even postpone.
Something is inauspicious, you should postpone it.
Yeah, something auspicious, why not do it right away?
So Mataji is saying we should immediately drop it.
How determined you are to make it successful?
Huh?
How determined one is to make it successful?
Okay. If I find myself stuck in a conversation with a devotee on some mundane topic, Pajapa, what should I do? Transcendentalize it. It's fun, you know. Take some mundane topic and just transcendentalize it. Yeah, actually, Krishna consciousness is such a broad philosophy. You can stake any mundane topic and you can transcendentalize it. It's like somebody says, it's like in the U.S., the big thing is the Super Bowl, you know. Someone says, Prabhu, who won the Super Bowl? And you could say something like, there's so many ways you could say, well, so what is the superest bowl of them all? Hari Bowl. You know, he's got to be a little poetic, and you know, people like, if you're poetic, people love to talk with you, and you can always bring them to Krishna. You have to be poetic, and then devotees will, everyone likes to talk with somebody who's poetic, because it's always enlivening to hear what they have to say. And if you do it in a Krishna conscious way, you'll become more inspiring and enlivening for the devotees. Comment?
You said very good.
When I often associate with senior devotees, my respect for them and prevents me from interacting with them naturally. Such interactions feel mechanical and make me uneasy. How to interact with senior devotees naturally while maintaining a respectful attitude? Actually, to have awe and reverence, especially in the presence of your spiritual master, and not to be too... You don't want to be buddy-buddy with your spiritual master. Sometimes Prabhupada would be very heavy. Devotees would be a little bit too familiar. Like one devotee picked him up at the airport. Prabhupada was in the car, and he was driving, and there were some other devotees in the car. The devotee said, "Well, Prabhupada, he just come from another country. Prabhupada, what was it like in the other country?" It's like a conversation you'd have with somebody, you know. And what was Prabhupada's response? And the devotee said, "What are you doing talking to Prabhupada like that?" The Prabhupada didn't say a word. He just didn't say a word. The devotee knew. I really blew it. I'm too familiar with my spiritual master. You know. So, it is actually quite good to realize you're dealing with your spiritual master. You're dealing with the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. It's not just like buddy-buddy chat, you know, let's have a chat. Gurudev, let's have a chat kind of a thing. You know. It's always serious business. Now, when the spiritual master relaxes the mood, as Prabhupada would sometimes do, especially in his quarters with his servants, you know. The thing is, you take whatever mood the spiritual master is giving, and you go along with his mood. That's the way to, then you're fine. Whatever mood he's manifesting, you go with that mood. If it's strict business, and go with that. And if it's a lighthearted, you know, a joke or something like that, you go with whatever mood the spiritual master is in, and then you're okay. Just always always tune into his mood, and that you can be totally comfortable and feel totally okay just by always tuning into his mood. That's the way to do it.
That if we go totally together with the mood of the
spiritual master, then the spiritual master is joking, so would someone want to joke back with the spiritual master? No, you laugh at his jokes. Sometimes devotees wouldn't understand Prabhupada's jokes also. Prabhupada would laugh. But there's one joke Prabhupada told There was one man in Calcutta. Whatever, you could blindfold him, and you drive a car by, and he could always recognize what kind of car it was just by hearing it as it went by. You heard that joke? So anyway, in those days a Buick was a very high class car in India, a Buick. So they drove a Buick by, they drove something else by, and then they took a donkey with a bunch of tin cans, and they brought it by, and he said, "Oh, that's a Ford." So actually, a sense of humor is one of that's part of a rasa of a pure devotee. The humorous rasa is there. Prabhupada, actually, one time some judge made a ruling about the devotee's preaching in the court. The judge said, "And this order will stand as long as the country lasts." And Prabhupada appreciated. He said, "This judge has a sense of humor." He said, "Every gentleman has a sense of humor." And he very much appreciated the gentleman and said, "As long as the country lasts." The judge, he's representing, it could have been Australia, the US, I don't know which country it was, but he said, this ruling will stand as long as the country lasts. So Prabhupada appreciated that sense of humor. If there are so many controversies and fall downs in ISKCON, how do we maintain a trusting relationship with devotees, sannyasis, and gurus? Well, you really have to know the books and live the books, and then you'll be fine. Because these books are the basis of our movement, these books are the strength of our movement, You have to study these books regularly and live these books. I remember when I was in Dallas, at that time we had a big book distribution program going on at the airport. We had some of the big Maharatis of book distribution out there every day, distributing hundreds and hundreds of books in the airport. Sura Prabhu, Vaisheshika Prabhu, who's still a big gun in the book distribution department, organizing congregations now to go out and distribute books. He's very powerful. If you invite him, if you want to organize book distribution here, bring Vaisheshika Prabhu over here. And let him organize the whole congregation for massive book distribution. He's very expert. Indian congregation. He's very expert. He's doing it in his own temple in San Jose and other temples. Very good person. Anyway, Vaisheshika Prabhu, Sura Prabhu, other book distributors, they would come back a day at the airport. They just sit back and eat a bunch of prasadam and go to sleep. No, they would open up, they would read and discuss Prabhupada's books with great relish. They would go in deeper and deeper into these purports of Srila Prabhupada. And that's the strength, you see. There's been so many controversies and fall downs, even when Prabhupada was here, it was going on. So it's not surprising it's happening when he's not here. You would expect it would happen more when he's not here, and it has. As they say, when the cat's away, the mice will play. So after in Prabhupada's physical absence, we expect there's going to be so many difficulties. It's par for the course. He even mentions it in his purport. Then when a great acharya comes, he creates order, and when he departs, then chaos returns. Then it's up to the sincere disciples of that spiritual master to rectify the situation by following his instructions. So we should see these controversies and fall downs as an opportunity to become recognized by Srila Prabhupada. Should see that as a great opportunity to become recognized, that let me do some service. There's some problems in our society. This devotee has fallen, that leader has fallen. And it's natural in a war there's going to be fatalities. So what does it mean when there's fatalities? It means those who are surviving, they have to step forward and become heroes. That's what it means. Yeah.
Maybe I can say this thing in a different way.
Sure.
I don't know whose question is this. Does our Krishna consciousness, my question is to that person, does our Krishna consciousness depend on others? No. First thing, no. And take the example of many people die in hospital. If your relative or you get sick, wouldn't you go to the hospital? So ISKCON is another type of hospital which is trying to cultivate everybody for Krishna consciousness. So we should see that there are so many casualties here. So we, by seeing that casualty, we should remain ourselves pure and uplift ourselves. Not that we're not going to go to the hospital, not that we don't go come to ISKCON, but we should see this example. There is many people who are becoming devotees, and many people are becoming greater and advancing a lot than the number who has left. So we should be encouraged by that. Not how many people left and how many people
left. A very good example. Well, somebody died in the hospital, so I don't dare go there. It's a very good point. There are fatalities in hospitals. But that doesn't mean you don't go to the hospital. This is a very good example you've given. Thank you. Okay. How do we deal with initiated devotees who don't want to contribute to the temple because they feel suspect of mismanagement of funds? That's an excuse, because the funds here are being managed properly. I've spoken with the management of this temple. Funds are being managed properly and sincerely. If somebody is envious, then they are spreading false rumors because they're envious, and they are in the category of tamasic devotees that we've read about in this book. These are tamasic people. They're not advanced devotees. They're fallen tamasic devotees. And we should distance ourselves from such persons. And whenever we have an opportunity to help them, we should. We should not be, the dogs will bark at the caravan will pass. They are like dogs. Persons who just automatically, necessarily find fault. How can I develop a mood of forgiveness? Well, just think about how much you've been forgiven for all of your nonsense. Yeah, seriously. And pass on the mercy. When you have made a mistake or fault towards another devotee, what steps can be done to rectify the mistake? Apologize to them, but not mechanically. It's not that I'm offensive to you and I say sorry, and then the next day I do the same offense, I say sorry, the next day I say sorry. No. If you're really sorry, you won't do it again. You see. If you're really sorry, you'll strive like anything never to do that thing again.
It will show.
But Prabhupada actually wrote me about this.
That will show in one's action.
Yeah. Well, you should apologize on the mouth. But then you should follow up your mouth with your actions. Don't just be an apologizer on the lips. Apologize by your actions. And the tip is, it all begins in the mind, so change your mental, your attitude, and then your words and your actions will follow suit. Always be engaged in the activity of purifying your mind, because the mind is the problem. It's covered with lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. Always be working on purifying your mind by chanting Hare Krishna and of trying to avoid the 10 offenses. And then all these problems will go away. Okay. Maharaj, you're always insisting in your lectures that chanting should be done on beads, as if Mishra chant on counters. Well, if you want to chant extra rounds, you can do it on your counter, it's okay. You're quicker. But 16 rounds should be done on the beads. Prabhupada says in the purport of the Bhagavad Gita that chanting round the beads. I've seen what they use the clicker for in Sofia, Bulgaria. There's a public restroom. And they keep a count on how many people go to use the toilet, but they have a clicker. See, someone's with a clicker. Every time someone's using the toilet, click, click. They count how many people use the toilet with a clicker. And I'm not so inspired to use a clicker for japa, because Prabhupada never introduced clickers. That came after he left the planet. There was not one clicker in ISKCON during Prabhupada's presence. Not one clicker in the whole society, in the whole movement, when Prabhupada was here. We didn't need clickers. No one even thought of clickers. What did we? Did Prabhupada had a clicker at the initiation yoga? Here's your clicker. You never get clickers. They've never handed a clicker. No Vaishnavacharya. This is a concoction. Now, if somebody, if you're in a place, I was just in China, and even there, I didn't see one Chinese devotee using a clicker. Even in China, where they have to be very undercover. But did you see anyone using a clicker there? We were just in China. We were preaching in China, Chengdu, China, before we came here. We had a wonderful 3 days, 3 nights. It was so wonderful preaching to these Chinese devotees. They can't wear tilak. They can't wear devotional clothes. They're undercover. But still they're chanting on japa beads. So, I mean, you say, well, because I chant while I'm driving, I have to use a clicker. Well, why are you chanting while you're driving? Can you really be attentive? Can you really... this is meditation. This is Maha Mantra meditation. Can you meditate while you're driving a car? I'm meditating, Prabhu, in the holy names. No, you're not. You're driving. I mean, do yourself a favor and get up early in the morning. Go to bed as early as possible, get up as early as possible, and chant on your beads. You will find an amazing transformation of consciousness. If you just really focus, you have your time, and it's just you and the holy names, and there's nothing else. If you chant while you're on a clicker, while you're doing this and that, You know, your japa is, you're not focusing on the holy name. You're not going to get the benefit.
It's a japa in vain.
Huh?
As a Christian says, don't chant the holy name in vain.
Yeah, vain repetition is, yeah. It's like vain repetition in the Bible. I personally don't want any of, as a spiritual master, I'm telling my disciples, no clickers. Now, some gurus actually give clickers to their disciples. But one guru gave a clicker to his disciples, a gift. But that's not right. It's not right. It's not what Prabhupada wanted. It's not what Prabhupada did. We should stick to what Prabhupada has given us. We shouldn't concoct all these newfangled ways to practice Krishna consciousness. Time, you can't say, well, there's time, place, and circumstance. You know, no, japa beads are not time, place, and circumstance. They are coming down from the great acharyas. Go to Rupa Goswami's samadhi in Vrindavan, you can see Rupa Goswami chanted on japa beads. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura chanted on japa beads. Even as described, Lord Chaitanya chanted japa. So this is our tradition, to chant on the beads, clearly stated by Prabhupada in his books, chant round the beads. So I'm very strong on this point, you can see. I don't like these clickers. I think we should get rid of them. The gift store should not have them. All the ISKCON gift stores should get them off the shelves. Get them out of here. It's the concoction. It doesn't belong in our movement.
I heard Lord Chaitanya used to chant on his fingers sometimes when he never had beads. Is that true, or is that just what I heard? Something?
Yeah, I've read chant on the finger.
On his fingers.
Yeah. And I was... I did chant on my fingers one time. One day I did chant on my fingers because I've been arrested. I was put in jail for the heinous crime of distributing Back to Godhead magazine. That was one day I didn't chant on my beads. I chanted on my fingers. Because Lord Chaitanya chanted on his fingers. I chanted on my fingers. It's just like the Brahmins count to 10. You can actually do your... If you're ever arrested, you don't have your japa beads. You chant japa on your fingers. You can do 10. You know how the Brahmins count to 10 on the right hand? Well, I'll give a quick lesson. You better give you a heads up on your Brahmin initiation. Here's how you do it. You have 12 sections here. These two sections are not canon. You start right here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 10. And over here you can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And that's 100. And then you do eight more up to here, and you got one round. And that's how you, if you're ever arrested and you don't have your beads with you, you can chant on your fingers. And then I had in those days we gave out candy on Sankirtan. We'd offer to, Prabhupada said we could offer candy to the deities, and we'd give it out, be one piece of candy, and then ask him to take a book. It was a nice warm way to. So I had some, they let me take my candy into the cell, so I used my candy as my counter beads. Every time I chant one round, I put one piece of candy on the other side of the bunk in the jail cell. So that way I counted my 16 rounds, 16 pieces of candy for my 16 rounds. So anyway, yeah, please don't use clickers. I mean, please get back to what Prabhupada gave us. Please eliminate the clickers. Please do this. And that's my humble request for the whole movement. Please get rid of these clickers. Okay. The difference between sadhu, saint, yogi, and tapasvi. Well, you see, every word has different definitions. So, oftentimes, these words could all be seen as synonyms. A sadhu and a saint, see, the yogi is a bhakti yogi, then he's a saint of the highest order. They could be synonyms, or the yogi could refer to other types of yogis, like a hatha yogi, kundalini yogi, jnana yogi, a tapasvi, one who is doing tapa. It could be a sadhu, a saint. Could be someone like Hiranyakashipu doing tapa for mystic power to rule the universe. You see, he was tapasvi also, but it was a material purpose. So let's see here. Is there more questions?
Yeah.
Okay. If your job demands to stay up late, Can we still somehow get up early and do our morning service in japa? You may have to, under extenuating circumstances, you may have to adjust things. We have to be flexible because there's a practical aspect. Prabhupada said utility is the principle. So we do have to earn livelihoods, and you may have to adjust things sometimes for your livelihood. But you, as far as possible, you should always get up early. If your job, if you get home at 1 o'clock in the morning every day, there's no way you can get by in 3 hours. Unless you're highly, highly advanced, get by in 3 hours of sleep. We have to be practical. But I've seen that Krishna reciprocates. If you have a strong desire, just like I joined the movement as a brahmachari. I was a brahmachari for 14 years. And then I entered into grihastha ashram. But I'd always gone to Mangalarti. You see, to me, I couldn't live without Mangalarti. To me, a life without Mangalarti was like living in a grave. You see, not going to Mangalarti is like living in a grave. So I couldn't tolerate the idea. So I got a job, and guess what my hours were at the job? From 11 at night till 8 in the morning. Oh my God, what happened to my Mangalarti? What am I going to do? Oh Krishna, Krishna. What can I do? I need some livelihood. But you know what? Because I had this strong desire to go to Mangalarti, you know what happened? My boss said, nobody likes to work this night shift. So you can take it. We don't mind if you take an extra long lunch break every day. There's no problem with us. So when did I take my lunch break? At 4 o'clock in the morning. I was 15 minutes away, you see, from the workplace. I drove over to the apartment, picked up Vishnupriya Manaji, went to the temple for Mangalarti, attended Mangalarti, and got back to work by 5:15. So I took about an hour and 15 minutes for lunch. They had no problem with that. And I get into Mangalarti every day.
Yeah, you said extenuating circumstances, like if someone has to work until 1 o'clock, then we have given so many hours for the body. Can't we struggle 2 more hours for ourselves to chant our japa and then take up a break for the body? That would be my question for
him. Yeah, why not? Come, if you get back at 2 o'clock in the morning and chant your rounds and go to sleep.
You sleep after the prasanna. You have worked so many hours for the body, not for yourself. So give 2 hours struggle for yourself.
The secret is you have to prioritize Krishna consciousness. Within your heart, you must always give it number one top priority. Always. Krishna reciprocates for that.
Would it be difficult? We have given 8-10 hours for the body to give 2 hours for yourself. Is it difficult?
And from another angle, are you the body?
That's why I said that body.
Are you the body? No, you're not. You're the Atma, you're the soul. So if you're willing to spend all this energy just to maintain your body, and you don't spend any energy to feed your soul, then what are you? Where are you? You're an illusion. So don't be an illusion. If all you do is serve your bodily needs, you're an illusion. Do you think you can be happy if you live in a state of illusion? You'll never be happy. I don't care how much money you make, you'll never be happy. Don't remain an illusion. Always put Krishna consciousness first. There was a nice Bhaktivedanta article written by one of our members, a young girl, college student in Toronto. She was in graduate school, actually, getting an MBA or something. Really intense. A very bright girl. A very bright girl. But it was really intense for her to get these studies, So she came home like 10:30 at night from an exhausted day at school. She had all these papers to write, exams to study for. She was totally wooded. She hadn't even started her rounds yet. She was thinking, what to do? Should I study? Should I chant? Should I write a paper? What should I do? And she didn't know what to do. Then she said, no, let me do Krishna first. Then she picked up her beads, she chanted rounds, and then everything made sense. Once she chanted those rounds, she said, now I'm going to study to do well at school for Krishna. I'm going to write this paper for Krishna, study for this exam. Everything was for Krishna. Once she did her rounds first, Now she was connected and she could offer everything to Krishna. But if you're just doing it, you're not chanting, then you're out there just drowning. So first priority is chant those rounds, you see. And then your whole day now becomes turned into an offering to Krishna. This is very important. Do not neglect this. Okay. All right. Does our japa indicate the level or depth in which we can associate or develop relationships with other devotees? It works both ways. The quality of your rounds will definitely have an impact on the quality of what kind of association you can have with the devotees, and the way that you associate with the devotees will also impact the quality of your japa. It works both ways. So try to improve the quality of your association with Vaishnavas, your chanting will get better automatically. Try to chant better, your association with Vaishnavas will get better. You can work it from both ends. And you'll be smiling all day long, I guarantee you. If you start get serious into, you become a serious sadhaka who's always trying to improve his loving relationship with Vaishnavas and his loving relationship with Nama Prabhu, the holy names, then you'll be in bliss. You'll be in bliss. Okay. Can we maintain a loving relationship with the temple deities? If yes, how? Oh yes, you definitely can. You must give your heart and soul to Radha Gopina. Give your money. Give your time. Give your energy. Give your words. Give everything you have to Radha Gopina. You see, they're real. You think those are just deities standing up there? Just some statues. Some beautiful statues up there of Radha and Krishna. Is that what you think they are? Don't be an atheist, please. If your heart becomes pure, the deity can directly talk to you. You know the story of that Sakshi Gopal? Everyone knows that Sakshi Gopal story. The deity walked all the way across India to honor the promise that was made in his presence. You know the story of Gauridas Pandit? Yeah, he's a follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And a very great devotee of Gaur-Nitai. He had Gaur-Nitai deities in his house. So Gaur-Nitai actually came and had lunch at his house. And then after the lunch, he said, we're getting ready to leave. He said, oh my Lord, please, I can't bear your separation. You please stay here. He said, we are staying here. Don't you see we're on the altar? He said, those are deities. I want you to stay. My dear Lord said, okay. So Lord Chaitanya, they went up and stood on the altar, and the deities got off the altar and were walking out of the house. And then he said, my dear Lord, please don't leave. Please, you must stay. He said, what do you mean? Don't you see we're on the altar? And then, so they said, okay. The two lords who were leaving, they went back and got on the altar again. The lords on the altar then came off the altar and went back and forth, back and forth. So if you think those are simply statues, that's not actually Radha and Govinda. Radha and Gopinath, the Supreme Lord and His Eternal Consort, is actually standing there. And you got some problems. You know, you got some serious mental problems. That's Krishna Himself. That is Krishna Himself. Standing in the altar. Even Prabhupada deity. Do you think that's just the deity of Prabhupada? I was in Atlanta a few years ago at the Panihati Festival. During the big, it's a big festival they have every year in Atlanta Temple. Devotees come from all over. Big, huge festival. And during the noon Arti Kirtan, Prabhupada was crying. A tear was coming down his left eye. It's like Prabhupada would become ecstatic sometimes during the kirtan. The deity was crying. The tear was coming down to Prabhupada. Don't think that's simply some statue of Prabhupada. If you worship Prabhupada here, Prabhupada will be here. Prabhupada and Krishna will become manifest according to your degree of love. So you must give your heart and soul. serving Srila Prabhupada and serving Radha Gopinath.
Can I make a point? It's not only the duties, if you have a loving relationship with the deity will manifest as Radha and Krishna for you. Srila Prabhupada will manifest for yourself. And same way, if we have a good relationship with the devotees will manifest that much for us with loving relationship. And if we have an impersonal and no good relationship, they will be like that too. So we are talking about relationship here. So we have to see how we are dealing. So that much the other devotee will reciprocate. Same as the deity, same as Srila Prabhupada also.
The more you give your heart to the devotees, the more you will feel their love coming back to you. That's the point. So give your love to Radha Gopinath, give your love to Prabhupada, give your love to the devotees, and you will feel how that love is coming back in the most wonderful, sweet, enlivening, thrilling, tantalizing way. Should one be chanting on Japamala while a devotee is giving class or in kirtan? Yeah, I remember. There was one devotee in one country, he would sit there in class chanting his round, you know. He wouldn't get up, he would sleep during the morning program. He'd sleep during japa, and then in class he's dutifully chanting his rounds during the class. That's ridiculous. You know, get up for the japa period. Don't sleep during the japa period and then come to and chant. Well, I gotta chant my rounds, Prabhu.
It's offensive.
Ridiculous.
It's offensive.
Yeah.
It's offensive on the chanting the japa also, and at the same time offensive to the speaker.
Yeah.
And offensive
it's
to
a Vaishnava, it's nam aparad, Vaishnava aparad, aparad. Really, it's not auspicious. How do I develop more faith in Krishna's plans and believe that whatever Krishna does to us is all for our benefit? I recommend you meditate on this verse often. This verse will help you. Tatte nukampam susamikshabano punjana evatmakatan vapakam shridvagapurvi vidadang namaste jivetiyo mukti prade sadayabak. This is 10th canto. Baba translates it in the Nectar of Devotion. My dear Lord, those devotees who are always offering you respectful obeisances from within the innermost core of their hearts while continuing to suffer the reactions for their past misdeeds are certainly eligible candidates for liberation. Indeed, it has become their rightful claim. So one has to actually see whatever is coming to me is the mercy of Krishna. You have to cultivate that vision. Even if it's something supposedly inauspicious, like disease, poverty, calamities of various kinds. The devotee cultivates the vision that Krishna is blessing me by everything he is blessing me. You see, that's the vision you have to cultivate, because that's the fact. Everything that's coming to us is a blessing from Krishna to help us come back to his abode. Everything that happens to us. That's, and Kunti Devi found that the calamities are better. She was praying like them. Pipada shanti tatta shvat tatta tatta jagad garo bhavadam darshanam yashad apunar bhava darshanam. My dear Lord, please give me more and more calamities. Because by these calamities, I'm always seeing you, and by seeing you, I will no longer see the repetition of birth and death. So one has to develop this vision. Otherwise you're going to be bewildered. Why is Krishna doing this to me? You see? Why is he giving me this health problem? You see? Well, this is a blessing. Your health problem is a blessing because you wanted to enjoy this material world. Krishna is helping you to see that this material world is not a place of enjoyment. This is his loving kindness to you to give you this health problem. Or financial problem, or any kind of problem. We have to have that vision. And then you know what happens? There are no longer problems anymore. You no longer feel I'm drowning in an ocean of problems. Now you feel I'm floating in an ocean of blessings. You see? You simply have to change your vision, and then you'll be living in pure bliss 24 hours a day. You don't have to change the situation, just change your perception of the situation. And then you're living in pure bliss 24 hours a day. Okay. All right. We've got 45 more minutes and the questions have run out, so pass more questions up. They say one should be fully engaged, but not overly engaged in Krishna service. If some devotee is taking on too many services, how should he balance his life? There is such a thing as over-endeavor. It can cause one to fall down. If you take on so much service that you can't rest properly, you can't chant your rounds properly, then you have to adjust it. I mean, you have to stay healthy. If you're burning yourself out or your health is bad because you're pushing yourself so hard that your health is falling apart and you don't have time to chant any japa, then something has to be done. You have to have a balanced program. You should be fully engaged, but not overly engaged. But at the same time, you should take on as much service as you possibly can, while at the same time being able to have good sadhana and good health. Next question. Okay. When you said we have to beat our mind, how do we do that? I actually read where it's explaining. I wish I could find it again. It's in the database somewhere. But I can understand philosophically. It was stated exactly what it meant. But I can understand the philosophical principle without remembering the exact quote. Beating the mind means to remind yourself that you're a rascal. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I'm a materialistic rascal, always full of lust. To remind yourself, you know, I'm just a rogue. I'm a rascal. I'm a demon. And somehow I've been blessed with this Krishna consciousness. In other words, you have to beat down any tendency you have to become proud or puffed up. It's like, here I am speaking to you all. You're very much appreciating and honoring me, you see. If I let this get to my head and think I'm some kind of a great character, then, you know, I'm killing my spiritual life. Killing it. I have to just understand that even though I'm completely unqualified and unfit, somehow or other, by Prabhupada's mercy, I've been given this service to be a messenger of Srila Prabhupada. Just deliver them whatever. He's given me a message. Now I'm to pass it on to you. That's it. I can never think that I'm some great preacher, or I'm some, you know, great realized soul or anything like that. Rupa Goswami gave a wonderful prayer. He said, I have no love for Krishna. I have no taste for hearing and chanting the holy names. I don't have the mystic power of a Vaishnava. I don't have knowledge. I don't have renunciation. I'm not even born in a very nice family. In this way, Rupa Goswami is talking about himself. He's saying how that the mood should be. So we should always be just cultivate the greatest possible humility we can possibly muster, of feeling ourselves insignificant, unqualified, and incompetent. That we should always cultivate. Always be trying to become more and more feeling ourselves lowly. You may say, but come on, how are you going to function in society if you view yourself lowly? You say, you've got to have some material society. You know, you have to be people who get succeeded, the ones who are puffed up, isn't it? I'm great. So if you become too humble, then people just step on you. So how is this even practical, one could ask? Everybody would take advantage of me. Well, there is the story given of the serpent. Actually, it was a cobra who became a devotee of Narad Muni. As a cobra, he was always terrorizing the villagers. They were scared to death of him. But now he's become a Vaishnava, And so the little children in the village, they were taking advantage of his humility and they were throwing rocks at him because they knew that he wouldn't attack. So he was perplexed what to do. He asked Narad Muni, his Guru Maharaj, what to do. He said that, show your head, but don't bite. So it's not the devotee. Devotee can show strength. He can definitely show strength. Actually, a devotee acts with great strength. As a representative of the Lord, even though he feels himself very lowly, he acts with great strength to push forward the teachings of his spiritual master and the previous acharyas. It's like Arjuna showed great strength in the battlefield. Hanuman showed great strength in the city of Lanka. So a Vaishnava is not in a mood of just rolling over and playing dead. He's a fighter. A Vaishnava, personally, he feels himself very lowly and fallen. But to execute the mission of the Lord, he becomes the most powerful person in the whole world. Most powerful person in the whole world. That's why I said one Vaishnava can deliver the entire universe. The Vaishnava becomes very strong on behalf of his spiritual master. Personally, he feels himself totally insignificant and meek and humble. But even Christ affirmed this principle. He said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. So beating yourself, beating your mind doesn't mean you walk around with your head down like this, you know. Papa told us in Africa, he said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. The Prabhupada is the most humble person, yet he's acting like a king. So a humble Vaishnava means you're humble before Guru, before Vaishnavas. When you're preaching the message of Krishna, you're like a lion. That is Vaishnava. You're like a lion, a roaring lion. Without developing any further comments? Okay. About developing loving relationship with devotees, how is it Krishna's mercy, which comes from within, and how much of it is our own endeavor? Actually, even our own endeavor is the mercy of Krishna, because only by Krishna's mercy do we have the ability to do anything. So everything is ultimately Krishna's mercy. You have to make the endeavor. But you have to understand that your endeavor alone can't do anything. We make the endeavor to the best of our ability and then depend on Krishna for the result. That's Krishna consciousness. Not that you sit back and let Krishna do everything. No. You do the endeavor. You make the full endeavor to be Krishna conscious, to manifest Krishna conscious relationships, to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. You make the full endeavor and then depend on Krishna for the result. After listening to your class, I understand that I'm still a Kanishka platform. I have a tendency to look at devotees as resources to engage them in service. After the service gets done, I don't even thank them sometimes. Please guide me to come out of this tendency. Well, the fact that you've recognized this is very good. You're just using devotees to serve your purpose. Instead of thinking how you can serve them, you're trying to use them to suit your purpose. Even if it's some Krishna conscious service, still using them so you can do your service. You're not really thinking of serving them, then it is a Kanishka tendency. Yeah. So that means you haven't become the servant of the servant of the servant. And that means you're not really getting connected with Krishna. Unless you become the servant of the servant of the servant, you don't get connected with Krishna. So those people who you're engaging in service, you have to be in a mood of serving them. Prabhupada said the spiritual master takes his disciples as his spiritual masters. He has to serve them by taking them back to Godhead. So you must take, you must become a servant of everyone, even those you're engaging in service. If you're a guru or you're a temple manager or whatever, a parent engaging your children, whatever it may be, you have to, even if you're engaging others in service, you have to be in the mood of serving them. Always. Always in that mood. Yeah.
The management is engaged in serving them by engaging them.
Yes.
So they can thank them and appreciate their service.
Yes.
So that is a servant of the servant. It's nothing wrong
with that is serving them by engaging in the service.
Yes.
That's a fact. But you have to appreciate their service.
Exactly. That's what they need to do.
Now you think, I sent all these devotees out to distribute books, and now I can send a big report in the DVT that my temple did this many books, That my name and fame as the temple president is now enhanced. But no, you have to actually see these devotees, the sacrifice they made to help you become more, your temple become more successful. You have to always appreciate the service the devotees have done. Could you please elaborate on the universal form of Krishna? Yeah, that's called Virat Rupa. That universal form is actually there. We're surrounded by it right now. We're even sitting on it. You know you're sitting on Krishna right now? He's Virat Rupa. Universal form is everywhere. But there's different degrees of being able to see it. And Arjuna was given the full vision of the Virat Rupa. He could see everything past, present, and future going on. It's just different degrees of being able to see it. I mean, some of our devotees have written poetic, nice poetries or nice songs, and taking some of these descriptions of the Virat Rupa. You see, the rolling rivers flow forth from his veins. There's one line I remember. The rolling rivers flow forth from his veins. So the rivers are the veins of the universal form of the Lord. The trees are the hair standing on the universal body of the Lord. So these are different. These sort of meditations are actually for those who cannot take to the form of the Lord, the actual form of the Lord, the transcendental form of the Lord. So material conception of the form of the Lord, we see it's like people who are in the nature worship, they go out to watch, to them God is watching, going to a mountaintop and watching the sunlight, you see. That's like Virat Rupa worship. They go out and they chant Om as the sun is rising, and they climb a mountain and watch the sun coming up, and they chant Om, and they feel like they're connecting with God by seeing the sun come up in the mountains. That's Virat Rupa worship. So that's nice. It's something, so we want to encourage them to come to a higher level. Okay. Sometimes devotees won't preach to each other because they think they might offend them, or they won't like to hear it, or might lose their friendship. Sometimes they see problems are not being solved because of this. What to do? Well, the thing is, what's the successful way to actually preach to somebody? It's sometimes said, I don't care how much you know. Let's see, I don't want to know how much, I don't care how much you know, but I want to know how much you care. You see? The thing is, if you want to be able to, just like in sales, there's a principle that people, if you don't like somebody, you don't want to hear what they have to say. That's a fact. If I'm going to hear what you have to say, I have to like you. If I don't like you, I don't want to hear from you. If I don't like you, I don't want to hear from you. So if you want somebody to hear from you, they have to like you. And how are they going to like you? You have to like them first. In other words, if you want to be able to preach to somebody and elevate their consciousness, first of all, you have to have a love, you have to establish a loving relationship. They have to feel that you love them. That's the first point. They have to feel, this person loves me, they care about me. Otherwise, you can talk so many things, it'll bounce off, it won't go into their brain. You have to first, that's why this loving relationship seminar is a very important thing. You have to establish, people have to understand, you really love them. You have to show people you love them by giving, we discussed it yesterday, the 6 loving exchanges. Give them prasadam, give them a gift. engage in loving exchanges with devotees till they really feel, this person loves me, this person cares about me. And then when you tell them something, they'll take it very seriously. But if they don't feel the love, they're not going to take your words very seriously. Come on. All right. There's a blank one. Mona, the Mona question. And my answer is... Okay. How to deal with relationships with parents and relatives if they are not devotees and not favorable towards Krishna consciousness? I deal with this all the time in my e-course. By the way, since I haven't announced it yet, but I have an e-course, and you can get something every day in your mailbox called Thought for the Day. It's very popular. We got 13,000 subscribers in over 100 countries. You just go to www.backtohome.com. Backtohome.com if you'd like to get in on it. Okay. So this is a common question my readers on my e-course asked me. I've got many people out there in homes where the family members are totally against Krishna consciousness. The first thing I ask them, well, do you have a private room in the house? And if you do, then get up wise early in the morning before everybody else is up and do your chanting with everybody else very quietly, like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Rise very early and chant your 16 rounds before anybody wakes up. That's one thing. The family is inimical. If they're totally inimical, they don't even allow you to chant. If they catch you chanting, they'll be chatting. It depends on the situation, but it sounds like it's very extreme. I mean, we've seen cases where the parents were so angry they took the Java beads and flushed them down the toilet. You can imagine. It was so heavy. They were so inimical. In that case, the girl moved. She moved into the temple, and now her parents are also. They got initiated too. The parents got initiated because the daughter was so determined. So determined. The parents became devotees eventually. They were so inimical. They flushed their Java beads down the toilet. You got to be determined. You have to be very, very determined. I mean, my grandmother wrote me a letter. She says, why didn't you become a Christian minister? You know? My dad said, why don't you do something for the society, like getting a job in a hospital? So you have to be determined. You have to be determined because they're going to try to break your dedication to Krishna by their nonsense words. You have to be very determined. Yeah.
It is not the parents. Huh? Sometimes it is ourselves. We are weak. And we want to put blame on others.
Yes.
Parents are very loving, and they care for you, and family members also will care as long as you are determined to do the right thing.
And a good line is, if somebody say, we don't want you to do this, you know, you shouldn't do this, you just ask them this, Mom and Dad, do you want me to be happy? Do you want me to be happy? What is your desire for me in my life? You want me to be happy? Well, I have to say yes. Say, okay, then let me be happy. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay.
It is a similar situation. When we leave ISKCON, we will criticize the devotees. Because of this, we left ISKCON. So...
When we are weak in our Krishna consciousness, then you blame others. So please don't do that. Bring your determination like a squirrel and go for it. The parents are very kind. They will give you. Nice. Can you please explain the difference between Uttama Adhikari and Majjama Adhikari in detail? This is described by Prabhupada in the Nectar Devotion. The Majjama are the second level devotee. He has firm faith. He has unbreakable faith in Krishna consciousness. However, he's not expert in explaining the philosophy of Krishna consciousness with shastic reference and with logical arguments. He's not completely able to, his ability to explain it is not developed. But the Prabhupada distinguishes the first class devotee, he has the firm faith, bless, he's very powerful in explaining the science of Krishna consciousness with shastric reference and with logical arguments. Prabhupada makes that distinction in the Nectar Devotion. There's other descriptions as well, that the Uttamadhikari, he sees Krishna, he sees everyone as Krishna's servant. He sees everyone in relationship with Krishna. Even the materialistic people, he sees all of them in relationship with Krishna. He has a very strong vision of being able to connect everything with Krishna wherever he goes. He can see the connection with Krishna in everything wherever he goes. Another difference. The Majjhima hasn't developed that degree of vision yet. But the Uttama has. If free will only leads to the state, to this state, why Krishna allowed free will? I answered this yesterday. It is understood that love is not binding, but it only leads to downfall. Don't you think it should not be there? Well, this is, Prabhupada says actually it's inconceivable. I mean, we try to explain it. This answer I've been giving for the last, I've been doing my thought for the day thing and my email thing for since 2003, and this question is coming up over and over again. And if you try to understand it simply logically, you'll never understand it, because it's inconceivable how a living entity could ever fall down from the spiritual world. We simply have to take it that as Prabhupada said, it's a misuse of independence. We just have to take it on the authority of Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas. It's a misuse of independence. We can give many logical explanations, and if somebody, you have to have some degree of faith in the words of the great Acharyas. There's some degree of faith has to be there. And you can look at it mathematically, it makes sense mathematically. There's an infinite number of living entities in the spiritual world. So, the love cannot exist unless free will is there. Because love means voluntarily. You can't force somebody to love you. Love has to be voluntary. Free will must exist, otherwise love cannot exist. Krishna doesn't... Who wants to live in a world without love? I said, okay, we have a solution now for all the quarrels going on in your house. We can take away all your family members and give you robots. A robot mother, a robot father, a robot wife, robot kids. All robots, so there'll be no more arguments. You can live with a whole house full of robots. Who's willing to sign up for the new robot program? Is he? Krishna doesn't want to live in a spiritual world of robots, you see. He wants to live with people who have a choice of loving him or leaving him, who choose to love him because they're inspired by his loving relationship. You understand? So it really makes sense if you analyze it in this way. It makes a lot of sense. So that means free will must be there. Of course, so if free will is there, there's a possibility you could misuse it. If it's absolutely impossible, then it's not really there. So if free will exists, there has to be a possibility of misusing it. And if there's a possibility of misusing it, there's some degree of probability of misusing it. If there's no probability, there's no possibility. And if there's probability, then we enter into a realm known as probability statistics, which is a branch of mathematics. And what is the probability then of a living entity misusing its free will? Or, you see, it's 1 over infinity. It's the smallest possible number you could ever have, which is 1 over infinity. But if you apply 1 over infinity against the infinite number of living entities in the spiritual world, what's 1 over infinity times infinity? It's infinity. So there you have it, an infinite number of living entities who fell into the material world. that infinitesimal, absolutely infinitesimal fraction of the infinite number of living entities in the spiritual world who misuse their free will translates into an infinite number of living entities in the spirit, in the material world, trying to imitate God. So, if you, you know, there are logical ways to explain it, but ultimately, you know, just go back to Godhead. Don't trouble yourself over this. It's like, wow, where did this arrow come from? I got an arrow in my chest, the blood's gushing out, and I'm trying to analyze. Where did this arrow come from? Came from there. Get the arrow out. Then worry about where it came from. So you go back to Godhead first. That's your first business. Go back to Godhead. And then you can think, well, how is it possible I could have misused my free will?
But, well, if we just take out our arrow in this world, we are in the spiritual world.
We're in the spiritual world?
Yeah, we will be in the spiritual world, but we are trying to gratify. Just like we have a free will right now here, either to take our Krishna consciousness seriously or to live in the material side. But we prefer to live in the material side instead of becoming fully Krishna conscious. Our example is Bilwa Mangal Thakur. He was also living on the material side, but when he became fully Krishna consciousness, he was with Krishna. Krishna was serving him. So we can be in the spiritual world right here, right? But we don't want to. We want to gratify our senses. So same way the free will, that's how we came down to material world here.
Yeah. It's like people who come to Krishna consciousness and they leave it. The same thing.
Yeah. Even those who are practicing, their side, more side is on the material side.
I feel overwhelmed by some devotees who reciprocate too much. Their gratitude makes me embarrassed to receive so much from them in exchange for having preached to them. How do I deal with it, Maharaj? Well, not only do you have to learn how to give love, you have to learn how to accept love. That's an art also. Giving. The six loving exchanges are giving and accepting. So you have to learn how to accept love also in a nice way, in a proper way. Don't be an impersonalist. You see? You have to learn how to accept love also. You do it in a very humble way. You have to learn how to accept it. I mean, it is embarrassing. Prabhupada was also embarrassed.
How many questions?
Let me finish the point. Prabhupada was also embarrassed when we offered him a Vyasa-san in Los Angeles. The first time he was offered a big Vyasa-san, he started crying. He said, I'm not qualified to sit on this seat. But I'm doing so on behalf of my spiritual master. So Vaishnava never feels that he's qualified to receive any service. But he accepts that service in a humble way. One, it gives the other devotees an opportunity to render service. He accepts it on behalf of his spiritual master, as Prabhupada did. So you have some further things to say?
Further addition to this one is, we have to learn to give only. We are always taking service from everybody.
Oh yeah, the same thing.
We are always taking from Krishna. We do not know how to give. That's the only sign we don't have it.
Manaji is saying this is artificial, actually. It's not that we don't. The trouble is we're always taking.
We take from the spiritual master, we take from the devotees, but we do not know how to give, and that is the problem.
There was one lady in one Eastern European country. She's been coming to the temple for 17 years, chanting 16 rounds. And she asked a question in the class. She said, I know how to give, but I don't know how to take. What was the question, right? And then I gave some answer. Then Vishnu Priya Mataji said, actually, no. You're always taking, but you don't know how to give. And that woman was so impacted by Vishnu Priya Mataji's correction that she said, okay, I'll surrender and become a disciple. After 17 years, she took formal prana mantra, now she's getting ready for diksha. So, actually, the fact is, We may think that I don't really take. I just know how to give. But actually, we don't know how to give. We're just taking all the time. That's a good point. We're taking. That's our mood that's mature. We're taking. Now we have to learn how to give.
The main thing here we see, we are taking so much from Krishna, but we cannot even surrender to him. What are we going to give it to anybody else? And we are taking so much from Krishna. The sunlight, the air, the water, the main ingredients that we are taking even to maintenance, but we cannot even give Krishna anything. Even to chant 16 rounds is difficult for us, right?
Yeah. How can I please Krishna?
Give.
That's a nice question.
Give.
Chant Hare Krishna. Okay. Now we got a huge stack of questions. Okay. Queen Kunti. Maharani prayed to Krishna to give her sufferings or problems so that she can remember Krishna. But if a devotee also thinks of Krishna even in happiness, then why she has asked for sufferings from Krishna? She found that her Krishna Smaranam was more intense when there was suffering. Comment?
Running out.
We got 15 minutes.
10 minutes.
Huh?
10 minutes.
Huh? 10 minutes. 12:15. We're going to 12:30.
Yeah.
Your watch must be fast. 12:15.
I would like to ask them the questions.
All right. Now we're turning the table.
Ask you all the questions. The Krishna consciousness begins with what is the first step in that?
Shravanam.
So we have been hearing this about the relationship. Now what are we going to do about it? Apply it and put it into practice. So how are we going to do that?
Practice.
How are you going to practice? If you have heard properly, then you will know how to put in practice. Otherwise, it has gone through here and then out of the place will be gone, finished. Yes. So we have a request. You do not know how to put into practice, so we will request you. So if you have really seriously heard it, then we would request that once a week, you all should come for Mangalati. Have a Mangalati, good Mangalati, and chanting all together, have a good relationship with the devotees, chant together like Prabhupada wanted it.
Bhagavatam
class.
Once
a week. Bhagavatam class. Attend the whole morning program.
Once a week.
Once a week.
Sunday.
What day is appropriate for everybody to come together?
Sunday.
So Sunday is okay for everybody. Nobody said anything. Raise your hand, everybody.
Who's going to come every Sunday?
Right. Who is going to come? That's
every Sunday morning for Mangalarti, the whole program. Let's see a show of hands.
Mangalarti, whole program every Sunday. So that will show that this seminar is appreciated. Otherwise, it's no appreciation. It's just going to there and we are sitting and asking questions of it.
Your hand blew up?
But I come other days, so I might come every Sunday, I might come on Saturday. But I'll come on the Sunday if everyone else comes. I'll tick off everyone's
name. Let me ask this question. How many of you have appreciated this seminar? So, to give the appreciation, ongoing appreciation, if you can implement this every Sunday, that will show that you really appreciate it. That is the proof. Otherwise, it is just saying, okay, we appreciate, you have talked, and it's all finished.
Another point is, that's how we... Relationship means in practice, it's not in theory. By coming together and singing and dancing every Sunday for the full morning program, Bhagavatam, Tulsi worship, Japa, greeting the deities, Guru Puja, and Bhagavatam, by doing this every week, this will, the morning is the most powerful time for spiritual practice. This will bring you together and develop those loving relationships.
So once again, how many would like to do this? Very few, not everybody. Very few.
Madhusudha is going to come all the way from Canberra.
Sunday, there is no job. Everybody should be coming. We are requesting, humbly begging, everybody should come. If you really want to develop the relationship, everybody should come.
This is called spiritual family. The family that comes to Mangal Aarti together stays together. Anything further? All right, we'll do a few more questions. Then. I got 10 minutes. Okay. You said there's an infinite number of souls in the spiritual world. The Bhagavad Gita says there was never a time when Arjuna and the kings, etc., did not exist. Does infinite mean Krishna is always generating new souls to expand his pleasure, or is there a fixed number of souls in existence? Well, it's obvious because Krishna says there was never a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. Krishna has expanded an infinite number of living entities from his. He's eternally. The number of living entities has not changed. It's always the same. There's an unlimited number of living entities that are eternally expanded from Krishna. There's unlimited opportunities for loving exchange with Vaishnava. Okay. All right. How can one try to get rid of fault finding at the subtle level also? Look for your own faults. That's the best way. If you're looking for your... If your primary... Prabhupada said, strict with yourself and lenient with others. If you're mostly concerned to find out the dirt in your own heart, and you're really sincere about it, then, you know, you'll be more. You should be more concerned about finding your faults than finding anybody else's fault. And then you won't have a problem with fault finding. If you're the number one... person on your fault-finding list, your most important priority is to find the faults in your own heart, then you'll be okay. Is there a difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord Krishna? Vishnu is a category. That's what there's the category is known as Vishnu Tattva. There's the Vishnu Tattva category. There's an infinite number of Vishnu Tattva personalities. The original Vishnu Tattva personality is Krishna himself. That's why we are called Vaishnavas, devotees of Vishnu. Even though we're Krishnites, we are Vaishnavas. Because Prabhupada explained to one life member in New York City, Krishna is the original form of Vishnu. So, there, the original Vishnu is Krishna himself, and there are other Vishnus like the four-handed Vishnu, Karnadaka. There's so many Vishnus, but the original Vishnu is the two-handed Krishna. So there's no difference between that Vishnu and Lord Krishna because they are one and the same. But the other Vishnus that come out are one and different from Krishna. It's like a candle flame. You can take one candle flame, and you can light it another candle, another candle, another candle, another candle. It's actually one flame. It's one flame, so there's no difference. And that one flame expanded to all the other candles. It's actually one flame expanded to the other candles. At the same time as the original candle from which all the other flames came. So in that sense, there is a difference. I'm a devotee of Lord Vishnu, but I love coming to ISKCON. Am I doing something wrong? If yes, what can I do? No. Lord Vishnu is Krishna in the, it's an expanded form of Krishna. So we have no problem. If you're more attached to Vishnu, there is a case in Chaitanya Lila. There was a devotee, his name was Murari Gupta. And he tried to become devoted to Krishna because that's what everybody else was doing. That was the whole mood of Lord Chaitanya's movement, Krishna consciousness. But he was into Ram consciousness. He just couldn't, his heart was so attached to Ram. He tried to be Krishna, more attached to Krishna than Ram, but he couldn't do it. And you know what? He was an incarnation of Hanuman. So we're not saying that whoever wrote this is an incarnation of Hanuman or something like that. Sometimes it's like that way. Maybe your Swarup is in the Vaikuntha realm instead of Golok, and that's where you're meant to go, and that's where your heart is. But still, if you come here and worship Radha Gopinath, that will be the best way to perfect and protect your relationship with Lord Vishnu. So keep coming here. You're welcome. We love you. And, you know, we'll all be together in the spiritual world. And it is explained, though, that one can actually change, even if you have a rasa of being a Vishnu Bhakta in one of the Vaikuntha planets, one can change their rasa if one desires to do so in the spiritual world. Prabhupada says that. So right now you have a rasa with Lord Vishnu. That's fine. You're welcome here. We love you. We encourage you to become more and more a pure devotee of Lord Vishnu. But if your rasa changes, then that's all right too.
Can a devotee of Vishnu, can a worshipper, the form of Vishnu, will it be all right for them to chant the Hare Krishna mantra?
Yes, your Hare Krishna chanting will make you a perfect devotee of Lord Vishnu. So please take this process. You can get Vaishnava initiation. You can get the whole thing. You can be initiated as a disciple. You can do everything and still maintain your devotion to Vishnu. We have no problem with that. How to maintain consistency in bhakti. Feel empowered after a good class, but you do not get motivated after some time. How to keep that enthusiasm up. Well, I tell this example many times. It's an instruction I got from Prabhupada. And believe me, this works. I was really enthusiastic because I was associating with one of the most empowered preachers our movement has ever seen, His Holiness Vishnu Janaswamy. He made me a devotee, and we were really fired up in that association. So, when I got my beads from Prabhupada, it was from a distance, so I had to send my Guru Dakshina along with a letter. So I wrote Prabhupada. I really wanted to spread this Krishna consciousness movement because I was so inspired by Vishnu Janaswamy to want to spread the movement, you see. That was his mood. So I expressed my desire to spread the movement, and Prabhupada wrote me back the most wonderful letter. He acknowledged the exact amount of the three checks I had sent him, just like an accountant. The exact amount to the penny of each check. And then he said, I can see that you're a very sincere and enthusiastic boy who is eager for spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. He said, now continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. Well, you know what? I decided to capitalize on that order I got from Prabhupada, because the spiritual master is personally present in the orders he gives to his disciples. So I decided to embrace that order as my life and soul. And you know what? Prabhupada was right. He said, if you continue enthusiastically, Krishna will surely bless you. So I've been through, you know, we've all seen it. Many of us have been around for a while. We've seen the good, the bad, the beautiful, and the ugly in this movement. But I never let anything break my enthusiasm in any situation, because Prabhupada had ordered me, and he gave me a boon that if I did this, I'd get blessed by Krishna. And you know what? It works. It definitely works. For 40 years it's been working. Since I got initiated in 1971, it's been working. Prabhupada told me to be enthusiastic. I've maintained it. So all you have to do is take the order. I'll pass it on to you. Whoever wrote this order, whoever wrote this question, I mean to say, always remain enthusiastic. Don't walk away and lose your enthusiasm. You You always maintain your enthusiasm for being Krishna conscious and spreading Krishna consciousness. I'll give this instruction to all of you in the room here today. Always maintain your enthusiasm for being Krishna conscious and spreading it, and Krishna will bless you like anything. I guarantee you. As Prabhupada guaranteed to me, I've seen it work for 40 years. I pass on the same guarantee of Srila Prabhupada to every one of you in this room here today. Okay? Hare Krishna. And that, we have 2 minutes. Let's see, it was a short one. A little short one here. Let's see. Well, I'll try. Let's see. How to digest the fact that many of ISKCON gurus speak ill of each other, but outside they speak good philosophy. Well, sometimes there are disagreements amongst devotees. That's there. My experience is there's not many. There, my personal, even I may have sometimes a disagreement with a godbrother, I don't have any ill feelings towards him. I mean, I love all of my guru godbrothers. They're all very dear to me. I can think about each one of them, all of my guru godbrothers. Even I've sometimes disagreed with them. We may have had even some heated words of argument about different points because we didn't really see eye to eye on different points. That doesn't matter to me. Every one of them, I know they're very dear to Srila Prabhupada, and therefore they're very dear to me because they're very dear to Srila Prabhupada. So we may not, Prabhupada explains in Mern Purport that sometimes in spiritual life there are differences of opinion, but these are spiritual differences. Just like someone may say, we should dress Radha Gopinath in this outfit today. Another Pujari says, no, I think this outfit is better. We should dress in this outfit today. So does that mean they have to hate each other because they disagreed about which outfit to dress the deity in? You see? They both want to serve Krishna. So I don't really see it as ill will. We may disagree sometimes. No, I really feel the red outfit. No, the blue is the best. No, the red's the best. These are transcendental disagreements. So one godbrother may say, well, this is the best way to do. Another may say, this is the best way to do. But this doesn't mean ill will. It's because we disagree about how to serve Krishna. I may point out something that I say is wrong. That doesn't mean I have any ill will towards someone. Just like I pointed out, one godbrother was speaking something which was not according to Prabhupada's books. And I made a correction because it's been posted on the internet and it's affecting people's minds. That godbrother is very dear to me. I worship him actually in my heart. It's like I pointed out that Indra had posted something. He had made one point in his Vyas Puja offering in Vrindavan, which was not correct according to Prabhupada's books. But that doesn't mean I don't love Indra like anything. Actually, sometimes I meditate on Indra when I'm leading kirtan. I just meditate on Indra. I think about Indra when I'm leading a kirtan. I think about Indra Prabhu. Those wonderful kirtan. Even though I pointed out that he's making his point was wrong in his that he made the philosophical point, it doesn't in any way diminish my feelings of love for him. He's very dear to me. I listen to his kirtans. I have him on my iPhone. I mean, don't think that there's ill will just because we may say that some godbrother said, you know, did something that's wrong and we correct it. Doesn't mean I have any ill will. That's just an example. I don't know if that fully answered the question. But I don't see ISKCON gurus having ill will towards each other just because they disagree. Now, I don't know. I haven't experienced it. We may disagree sometimes. We may say that something is wrong. That doesn't mean the Prabhupada is the final arbiter. Prabhupada's books are the final arbiter. We may have difference of opinion. I mean, Prabhupada many times told us not to associate with his godbrothers because they would say things different from him. It would cause confusion in our society. But he never had ill will towards his godbrothers. Yeah, our time is up and the RT is waiting.